So happy to have you along today on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here, and we're starting the show today by talking with you about wetlands and the importance of wetlands. A good reason to talk about it right now is the 21st Annual Wisconsin Wetlands Association conference is coming up, and always Katie Belfus comes by ahead of that conference to talk with us about what's happening. So it's great to have her back. Katie is the Outreach Programs Director of the Wisconsin Wetlands Association. Also with us today, Robin Wall-Kimmerer. She is the keynote speaker at the conference. She's a plant ecologist. She's the author of the book Braiding Sweetgrass, Indigenous Wisdom, Scientific Knowledge, and the Teaching of Plants. And I saw the title of that book, and I said, you know what, let's you know, already Brianne was ahead of me on it and ordered a copy of the book because we want to maybe have her on and talk about the book sometime. Anyway, Robin, thank you for taking time to be with us.
Glad to be with you, Larry.
Oh, it's great to hear your voice. And Katie Belfus, always great to hear your voice, too.
Likewise. Thank you very much for having me.
All right. Let's talk about this conference. By the way, if you have a question about the conference or maybe you have a question about wetlands, I hope you'll join in. You can reach us at 1-800-642-1234. It's 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@WPR.org or post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. Love to hear from you. So let's talk about the conference. What have you got planned for us this year, Katie?
We've got 2.5 great days of talking about the latest in wetland science, restoration and management, and people, because people are an important part of keeping wetlands healthy, and the more we know, the more we can do that. So yeah. We're happy to do that. This is an annual conference. As you said, it's the 21st annual conference. It'll be in Green Bay next week, Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday.
Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday. And, okay, is there still time to sign up for it then?
We actually, ironically, closed advanced registration yesterday, but we're still welcome you. If you give us a call at the Wetlands Association, we can make sure we give your name down, and we do accept at-the-door registrations. And we do still have room for the banquet where Robin is the keynote. So please,
cool.
If you're interested after this conversation, give us a call, and we'll get you a ticket.
And, Robin, what's your keynote about?
Well, I am going to be talking about honoring the way that, because wetlands provide us with so much, what is it that we as people can do to reciprocate essentially these gifts of the wetlands? What are our responsibilities in return for everything that wetlands provide for us? And so some of that will be related to wetland protection, but even more importantly to wetland restoration and how it is that we can use traditional ecological knowledge or indigenous knowledge as a partner to Western science in doing restoration of wetlands.
You know, we talk about this every time that Katie's on, I think, about the importance of why wetlands are important. But you know what? I always think it's worth repeating, and maybe from both of you. Katie, you want to start talking about that?
Yeah. Ounce for ounce, wetlands are among the most important ecosystems on our planet in terms of the services and gifts, as Robin says, that they provide to us. Clean water, groundwater recharge, flood protection, wildlife habitat, shoreline protection. The list goes on and on. And those have ecological values, but they actually have societal and economic values as well that are often overlooked and are very, very critical to our communities.
Yeah. Robin, would you add to that?
I sure would. In addition to those ecosystem services that Katie was talking about, one of the things that we often overlook is what you might call cultural services, the ways in which wetlands really support human thriving, especially in indigenous communities where you think about so many of our important plants, and plants and animals both come from wetlands. We think about wild rice, manomen, a wetland plant, which is a cultural keystone species for people of the Great Lakes. Things like cattails, which some people view as just weeds, but you know the name in our language for cattails is, one of the names for it is the shelter plant. It's really important in all kinds of cultural things like making cordage, making shelters, making mats. It's also important for food. You think about black ash basketry, those beautiful black ash trees or wetland plants. So there's so many ways in which cultural activities are supported by wetlands that when we think about maintaining cultural integrity and indeed revitalizing indigenous cultures, that's all tied up with revitalizing wetlands too.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I want to give our listeners a chance to join in. Again, if you have a question or comment, maybe a question about the conference, maybe a comment about or question about our wetlands, join in. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. And let's take a call from Ken in Manitowoc next. Ken, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hello. I'm glad to be here. I really am looking forward to the show. My concern is that in Sheboygan, I think it's a city, there is going to be a trade of land, regular land, and then given wetlands. Aurora Hospital wants to build another one of their surgical hospital centers. And it's about 3 or 4 blocks away from St. Nicholas Hospital. And they are taking the school district is giving them land with a trade for some other land, which is wetland, and then they're going to fill it in. And I'm just wondering if there's anything that prevents them from filling in wetlands and doing that sort of thing.
Yeah.
Well, our state and the federal government both do have a role in protecting wetlands and regulating wetlands. Every case is unique, and so I can't comment on this particular situation because I don't know. There is a way for folks to build on wetlands and fill wetlands when there are not reasonable other alternatives. We try to minimize that, of course, and relocate that expansion. But in some cases, it's just not possible. So there is a practice called wetland mitigation that allows for that. If you fill it in place A, you can restore a wetland in place B. Not a perfect solution, better than nothing. We wish our laws could prevent that, but sometimes it is important to recognize the importance of economic development, and sometimes there's not an alternative.
What about if you are wondering whether or not it's been approved? What do you do as a citizen?
As a citizen, thank you, Larry, for saying that, because it's very important for folks like Ken to speak up when they see things like this happening in their community. Certainly contacting their city government, the Land and Water Conservation Department at the county is often a good place to go. You can also call our office, and we can offer some advice for at what point in the process is the most you're most likely to have an impact on those decisions. So that's another option as well.
All right. There you go. Thanks, Ken, for calling. Appreciate it. Again, you can join in 1-800-642-1234. Give a call with your questions or comments. Robin, you talked about rebuilding and restoration. And, you know, as we talk about changing or trading off non-wetlands for, you know, to make them into wetlands, sometimes, I would imagine it's hard to do. I'm sure it's hard to do. But talk about your views on restoration on and using traditional kinds of methods to do it.
You know, wetland restoration, both to enhance the wetlands that we have, and in the case that the caller mentioned, in situations where wetlands are going to be lost to try to recreate wetland habitat, it's a really important part of our job as stewards. And so oftentimes these mitigation wetlands, as they're called, wetlands to replace those that have been lost, we have to work really hard to be sure that they're well populated with not only the structure and function of a original wetland, but also the biodiversity. Because, as you know, wetlands are just hotbeds of biodiversity. So restoration planning really needs to rely on maximizing the diversity of the native plants and animal species that are there. And one of the things that I always like to emphasize when we talk about restoration is that it's not enough just to restore ecological structure, function, and biodiversity, but that we also have to restore our relationship to those wetlands, to return to a relationship of respect and gratitude for those wetlands so that we don't keep losing the ones that we have.
Yeah. I know, Robin, that you have a class to teach.
I do.
And I want to thank you so much for taking a few minutes to be with us today. I really appreciate it and look forward to your keynote speech.
Thanks a lot. It's going to be a great conference. Thanks.
Thanks so much to Robin Wall Kimmerer, plant ecologist, writer, SUNY Distinguished Teaching Professor at SUNY College of Environmental Science and Forestry in Syracuse, New York. Her latest book is Braiding Sweetgrass, Indigenous Wisdom, Scientific Knowledge, and the Teaching of Plants. Talking about, speaking of plants, of our Wisconsin wetlands today, Katie Belfus with us, Outreach Programs Director of the Wisconsin Wetlands Association. I'm Larry Mueller. Breanne Chasseau, our on-air producer on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Taking a look at our wetlands, and again, inviting you to join in, 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org, or go ahead and post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. Love to hear from you. Let's go back to the conference a bit, because I'd like to hear more about what's going on.
Yeah, well, we're really excited to be in Green Bay this year. We move the location around every year, and Green Bay is a wonderful place to talk about wetlands because there are a lot of wetlands there now, and there were even more wetlands there historically. I was amazed at the fact that an estimated 60% of the West Shore coastal wetlands in Green Bay have been lost.
60%. 60%, oh my goodness.
But even more important than that is that the coastal wetlands of Green Bay are purported to constitute 50% of the coastal wetlands of the entire Lake Michigan Basin.
Oh.
That given the fact that they only represent 7% of the shoreline. So if you imagine how big Lake Michigan is, those wetlands in Green Bay are hugely important to the health of Lake Michigan as a whole, because they represent such a large acreage of what we have for wetlands around the lake. So they're very, very important. There's a huge amount of work happening to restore those wetlands by a lot of different partners doing really great work. We're actually having a symposium at the conference that will focus exclusively on that throughout the day on Wednesday, talking about a variety of different initiatives to restore wetlands along Green Bay, to restore the Cat Island chain within the Green Bay, and a number of projects that are involving people in that community. So if you're interested in that, that'll be a great day to attend.
That Cat Island chain, could you explain a little more about that?
Well, I'd like to go. I'm going to go to the symposium so I can learn more about it. My understanding, which is not very strong, I'm going to learn next week, is that there was an island chain. There were some barrier islands within the Green Bay that have been eroded over time and gotten rid of, but they provided a buffering action so that the wave action, it protected those wetlands. So it's caused a number of different, and we've lost habitat for animals, but we've also lost that buffering action. So we'll be talking specifically about that Cat Island Restoration Chain project next week at the conference.
And invasives come into play somewhere along the way?
Yeah. Anybody who's been to Green Bay knows that Phragmites is that big,
worst.
tall, horrible plant that has invaded. And a lot of that, there's some thought that a lot of that invasion has to do with rise and fall of lake levels.
Yeah.
And that it got really bad when lake levels were low, but now that lake levels are coming up a little bit, it's abating slightly, and there's been a huge amount of work being done to try to control that. But invasive species are a huge problem in wetlands.
Well, I have watched the Phragmites in Door County, and it's unbelievable amount in some places, for sure.
Yep.
Well, Ricardo and Racine up next with a question. Let's go there. Hi, Ricardo.
Hello. My question basically is, it seems that the environment or the wetlands always take second nature, and making money takes first nature, and it's even gotten political. One group seems to want to make money, another one wants to seem to protect the environment. How do we turn this around so the environment is number one and making money is number two?
Ricardo, I would argue that we cannot have a healthy economy in the long run unless we have healthy natural resources, because the very basis of our economy depends on natural resources for everything that we do, and that if we don't take care of those systems, they will not take care of us, and we will not have an economy in the long run without that. So I agree with you, and we all need to learn to take a longer view of the importance of natural resources for our very sustainability and sustenance in the long term.
Yeah.
Thank you. More power to you.
All right. What are overall, let's talk about what are the main problems that our wetlands are facing?
Well, we've lost about half of the wetlands that Wisconsin originally had have been converted to other land uses, whether that's for urban development, suburban development, or in many cases in Wisconsin, it's agricultural development. We need agriculture in this state. It's a very important part of our identity and our economy. But there's a balance, too. Sometimes the places that we have, there was a strong culture for a long time to try to make every square inch of land productive for agriculture. And I think there's a lot of farmers out there that understand that not every piece of land is suitable for agriculture. Mm-hmm. So there are fields now that are drained, wetlands that used to be wetlands that could be restored, and the functionality of those wetlands could be improved if we were to do that. And there's a lot of programs for doing that. And we can do it in a strategic way so that we're saying to ourselves, what are the problems that we have? Do we have flooding in this area? Do we have water quality issues? If we restored wetlands here, then we would affect this water quality. Or if we restored wetlands over here, we would be helping with the flood issues that we've got in our community. So really taking a strategic watershed approach to wetland restoration to put those back on the landscape.
And how and who's involved in that? I mean, how do we get involved in that? And do...
Well, our organization partners with a lot of different groups doing great work. The Fish and Wildlife Service, the USDA, NRCS, the Natural Resources Conservation Service, the Department of Natural Resources, and there's a number of private entities as well, nonprofit groups that are working in this area. And we're trying to collaborate. Whenever there's wetlands on the table, we want to be there, too. So let's collaborate and get that done.
Oh, man. It's where are your projects now around the state?
We don't own any land or manage any land, but we work in partnerships to try to help provide the scientific resources and information to help other groups do those projects. And we also work, I should say, with private landowners, because that's a big part of my job. Did you know that 75% of the remaining wetlands in Wisconsin are privately owned?
No, I did not.
You sort of think, well, the DNR is going to, you know, in charge there. The Fish and Wildlife Service is in charge there. And they own some really important wetlands. But honestly, private landowners are where it's at when it comes to protecting and maintaining Wisconsin's remaining wetlands. And so we're doing a lot of work directly with private landowners and with groups like land trusts and other partners to reach out to those individuals and provide them with the information and resources, technical information that they need to be able to care for their wetlands.
Yeah, and at that level, at that private landowner level, where are the main problems? Are the main issues?
Well, I think for landowners, it's understanding. It's information. They want to do the right thing. Every landowner that I talk to says, I really want to take care of my wetlands, but I don't know where to start. And so just helping them feel comfortable that that's an issue, paying attention to water is the number one thing a wetland landowner can do to assess the health of their property. How did water historically flow through my site, enter and exit, and how has that changed? And then what can I do to try to restore, as to the best that I can in a modern context, how water is flowing? Because you can't deal with invasive species without dealing with water.
And do you have can people, can you point to places or show people who maybe they have land and they want it to stay in wetlands or they want to make it wetland?
Sure.
Do you have examples that we can show?
We're starting to build that. Our landowner outreach program is new, and we're building that. And that's your point is exactly on target, Larry. That the best way to help somebody understand what's possible is to look at what somebody who's like them has done. And so all of our landowner outreach has that in mind. So we always do workshops. We go to a privately owned wetland site and talk about what are the issues this person is facing, what are their goals, what do they want to achieve, what are the options, how do you take what's the sort of low investment option, what's the high investment option, and let those individuals talk with each other and learn from each other, because that hands down is the most effective way. And so I don't have a list that I can give you and your audience today, but that's what one of the things that we're working to do is to have sort of ambassadors throughout the state who are examples of landowners doing the right thing.
Katie Belfus, our guest today, outreach program director for the Wisconsin Wetlands Association. I'm surprised we didn't have more calls today, but people are quiet. It's a quiet show today. You can join in at 1-800-642-1234. You can also email us at talk@wpr.org or go ahead and post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mealer Show. We'd certainly love to hear from you. So give us a call, 1-800-642-1234. If you don't own wetlands or you're not... we don't own wetlands. What can you do to help wetlands?
Well, the caller earlier today, Ken, was a really good example. He's a member of his community. He sees there's something going on. He wants to know what's going on in my community and why and how can I help. That's really important. And being involved with and aware of what your community is doing, getting involved with planning and sharing your... Communities always have to do public input when they're doing planning. Yeah. And so making sure that your voice is at the table and that you're speaking up for wetlands is a really important thing.
And some callers coming up online right now. Again, you can join us at 1-800-642-1234. Again, email us at talk@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mealer Show. I know there's a fair amount of discussion these days in the papers and the press and so forth about wetlands.
Yeah, it's been a heck of a legislative session for wetlands and other natural resources. I can't actually remember a session where there have been so many bills that do so much damage or weaken protections for water resources. And there are a number of aggressive bills that threaten and harm our resources. And I just want to point out that there's been some really good substantial progress in limiting the damage of those bills for things like lakes and rivers, where there have been amendments to originally proposed legislation that resolve some of the challenges for those natural resources and make the threats lesser. And unfortunately, none of those improvements have been made for wetlands. That all of those bills continue to just leave wetlands out of the equation. You cannot talk about healthy lakes, rivers, and streams if you don't talk about healthy wetlands. It's just not possible. So it's a real shame that our legislators don't have that message that those things are connected, because you got to connect them. They're connected. So it's a challenging thing. Most of those bills are sort of at the tail end of their process. It's not my job to follow those bills, and so I can't give a detailed assessment of where exactly we are, although you could certainly contact our office to learn that from our policy staff. Keep speaking up for wetlands to your legislators and that they matter, because your legislators need to hear that message.
Rita and DeForest, thank you for calling. Hi.
Hi, I'm in the country between DeForest and Arlington, and I see all the farmers around me. They just don't seem to care about wetlands and woods. You know, they like are draining every little tiny pond I see around here now with these big ditches and these big pipes to like kind of dry it up, or, you know, plant one more row of corn or something. I don't understand it, and I don't know if it doesn't seem like information gets to them about like how to take care of the soil, even how to take care of the soil. But I really wanted to understand what this AB 600, I guess I'm told, maybe you just talked about it and I missed it when I was calling in, is about, that Walker just proposed to give developers, which I just can't bear, sort of more developers coming in and like filling in these wetlands.
Yeah, well, I did, Rita, just mention that I'm not the expert on AB 600, and I apologize for that. And I don't know where it is in the process, but certainly if you want to know, you can contact our office and speak with our policy staff at the Wetlands Association. And I want to say we are not, by any stretch of the imagination, against farming in Wisconsin. It's an important industry for us, and there's a very important role that farmers can play, a very important positive role that farmers can play with wetland protection and restoration. And in our experience, there's a very good marriage between wetland restoration and agriculture, that in fact, many farmers who can restore wetlands on their property can see a net benefit in certain ways. I want to point out that farmers are facing a tough road. You know, they're trying their best to make ends meet in a very competitive market. So I think getting them information is really important, and helping them understand how seeing their landscape as a whole will benefit their business.
I want to go back. Thanks, Rita, for calling. I want to go back to your conference. Who comes to the conference and who can't come?
Yeah, primarily the conference audience is wetland professionals, managers, regulators, planners, folks who are doing wetland restoration work, students, researchers, and the like. We have not typically, although we welcome members of the general public, much of the conversation is more technical than most people will be interested in, but we do have people who come and just say, we just want to learn more, and we want to meet people who can help us learn more. So everybody is welcome to come, and there will be presentations at the conference that would be accessible to anybody who's interested.
Let's go to Troy in Hartford next. Hi, Troy. Thank you for calling.
Hello. I just thought I'd call and share a few thoughts today.
Sure.
I'm born and raised a farmer, where I grew up was about 6 miles east of Oregon. And this last summer, my dad and I, we went to the new, the Ecological Center, I believe they call it, over at the DNR office there.
Yeah, it's a really cool center, isn't it?
Yeah, it took us almost 3 hours to go through everything in the basement, all the displays that they had set up down there. And we also did go on the pontoon boat ride, too. That blue heron pontoon boat ride that one evening. And there's a lot more to the Horican Marsh than I ever thought there was. I only saw it when I was driving around it on the roads.
And it is. It thanks a lot, Troy, for calling. I'm glad you brought that up.
Horicon is a great place. And did you know that it is a wetland of international importance?
Yes.
It's one of five sites in Wisconsin that have that very, very special global designation that's hard to get. And Horicon is among them. Our other sites are along the Mississippi River, the Caucagan Bad River Sloughs up north on Lake Superior, a group of wetlands in Door County, the Door Peninsula Coastal Wetlands, and then the Chewaukee Prairie down in far southeast Wisconsin, along with its neighbors to the south in Illinois, are designated. That's a very prestigious designation that recognizes the really strong importance of those areas.
Yeah. Thanks so much for calling. And Phil in Wanakee, on to you. Thanks for calling, Phil.
Well, good morning. Thanks for taking my call. I did have a question. What defines a wetland? Because I notice all the time developers and or farmers, there's cattails there or whatever. They can just run, make a big ditch, drain all the water, and houses and buildings and farms are spread out farther. And I'm going, well, how can they do that if it looks like a wetland?
Yeah, well, that's an excellent point. And one of the things I love about wetlands is that they don't look just like one thing. They're really enormously beautifully diverse. And the three pieces that you need to be to define a wetland are the soils. Does the area have special soil types that develop only under wetland conditions? Does it have plants that also have special characteristics that develop in wetland conditions, adaptations that help them grow in wet environments? And is there water at or near the surface of the land for all or part of the year? And that's really important because a lot of wetlands...
That or part is...
That's really important because some wetlands are really dry for parts of the year, and you might not know that they're wetlands because at that part of the year it's dry. So one of the limitations of the wetland regulations is they talk about wetland fill, which is putting stuff into wetland. They don't always talk about drainage. And so that's one of the challenges, is that in many cases draining is not illegal, whereas fill, dumping of spoils, would be. So it's a challenge with the regulations.
Well, that's the question that I asked, because I was wondering, is there illegal? But they can drain any kind of wetland they want as long as they...
Well, there's more nuance, of course, because regulations are never easy. But generally speaking...
That's it.
And sometimes things happen because people don't recognize that they need to ask for a permit. They don't recognize that there might be a rule, or they've gone to their town or to their county and gotten a permit from that level, so they don't maybe know that there's another level of regulation that they need to be aware of. And so a lot of times just people haven't asked the question, and so that you can still get involved as a citizen to call your town saying, is what this person's doing, is that okay? Doesn't look all right to me.
Yeah, there you go. Thank you, Phil, for calling. We have Ernie and Kohler up next. Hi, Ernie. Thank you for calling.
Hello, thank you for taking my call.
Sure thing. What's on your mind?
I guess it's more of a general comment about how to get the DNR to do their job. There's a mining permit application. If people remember the Crandon mine and the issues that raised, there's a mine across Krivitz, the Menominee River, and the Michigan side, that's they want 75 feet away from the Menominee River, and they want to use cyanide, and it's a heavy metal, it's a lead type mine, with gold and zinc and all that other stuff. And when we've approached the Wisconsin DNR, they basically just turn a blind eye to this, and really trying to find some resources in which to bring this to the public's attention.
Yeah, I just read about that yesterday, actually, and so it's a new issue for me as well that I can't speak to in a great detail, but certainly anything that's as large as that sounds like it's going to be will have impacts. And one of the challenges with wetland regulations is that we work within our state and county and whatever little political borders. We don't think about the way that water moves across our landscape. That's not how we make decisions in a regulatory framework. So Michigan might be making a decision that is affecting our water quality, but it's a different state. So how does that all work? And it makes it more challenging. You're absolutely correct that something as large as what they're talking about would have water impacts in Wisconsin.
Well, that would have to go through a permitting process.
It would. And as we saw here with the Gogebic Taconite mine that was proposed for northern Wisconsin, a lot of people will speak up loud and clear about the dangers, the challenges of some of those proposals. And we always go back to the science. What does the science tell us? what will happen to the water resources with this. We don't need to get all reactionary, but let's just look at what the science tells us will happen.
Yeah, there we go. Thanks, Ernie, for calling and bringing that to our attention. I want to go to Steve in Hayward next. Steve, hello to you. Thanks for calling.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I enjoy your show so much.
Thank you.
I'm a landowner up just outside of Hayward, and I own Lakeshore on a fairly busy recreational kind of lake of about 3,000 acres. I also, on my property, there's a 10-acre pond, which is part of a drainage from a lake that's upstream from us, and there's a swamp and a wetland that comes through, and then there's this 10-acre pond that I own the property all around. And I don't know up here in this northern end of the state who to call or who to talk to about making sure I'm being a good steward of that wetland and learning more about it.
Well, you've called the right place.
Yeah, you sure did.
Steve, we'd be happy to talk with you. And I have a handbook. We produced a handbook for wetland landowners a couple of years ago. Technically, it's the Eastern Wisconsin edition, but I promise you there's a lot of good information that'll help you even up there in Hayward. We also, on occasion, are able to come and visit landowners who ask for a property if we're in the area doing other work and we've got time to stop by. We'd be happy to do that. We don't get to spend a lot of time in wetlands, so we always look for those opportunities when we can. So give our office a call, Steve, and we'd be happy to hook you up with those resources. I'll give you the number, 608-250-9971.
608-250-9971.
Yep.
Good. I'll call and get some information. And, I hope someone can come up. I think you'd really enjoy it. It's an amazing wildlife experience there, and it's anxious to see it be that way for a long time.
Thanks, Steve. Thanks very much for calling. And do make that phone call. Rick in Door County up next. Hi, Rick. Thank you for calling.
Good morning, both of you. It just said something just a bit ago, and I was having my trouble getting my arms around it, in that it was okay to drain a wetland, but not okay to fill it. That just seems to be at odds somehow. And then I had a second question relative to in our back lot, we have, it's not an entire wetland, but there are pockets that have been classified that way. They don't really drain to anything in particular, and they just seem to be breeding ground for poison ivy, buckthorn, and mosquitoes. And how does that register in the big picture?
Well, I'll address your second question first, which is to say that there's a wetland type called an ephemeral pond, and I would need to see the property that you're talking about to say whether these are ephemeral ponds. But ephemeral ponds are one of the underrepresented wetland types in our wetland mapping system. They're just not as readily seen on the landscape, but they're little low depressions, often in the midst of a forest landscape, and super important for breeding for frogs and salamanders and the like, and for other reasons that we can get into at another time. Whether that's what you have or not, I don't know, but I just wanted to point out that that's something to keep an eye out for, because it's not something that you might think of as a wetland, because it's dry a lot of the year, but it does have a very important function on the landscape. So I agree with you about the whole counterintuitive draining but not filling thing, and I also don't want to overstep my knowledge of regulatory details. And so maybe you and I can have another conversation about that another time, Rick.
Oh, thank you very much for calling, Rick. Appreciate it. Phil in Cambridge has something for us. Hi, Phil. Thanks for calling.
Hi, Larry. Yeah, I wanted to point out that wetlands are often associated with groups of Native American burial mounds.
And wondering if you can expand on that. Is that the case, Kate?
I don't know. That's new. I'd love to know more about that association. It wouldn't surprise me at all.
The Nitschke Mound group just on north of the Horicon Marsh.
Well, as Robin pointed out, there's a lot of tight connections between indigenous culture and wetlands. And perhaps, I don't know. I'd love to know more about that, and I hope someone will call and let us know if that's true.
And thanks a lot for calling, Phil, because that brings us back to Robin Wall Kimmerer, our plant ecologist, who is the keynote speaker at the Wisconsin Wetlands Association conference, and she's up. When is she talking?
She'll be talking Wednesday night at the banquet next week on the 24th.
And it's in Green Bay, of course.
Yep, the Radisson Hotel.
She may have some information on that.
Yeah, I bet that she would. And she's doing a lot of work with the Menominee Nation, I know, here in Wisconsin and perhaps some other tribes as well. So she's well connected.
Maybe we should, yeah, I should try to make sure, bring that to her attention
for
or
sure.
at least ask
yeah,
her about
well, definitely.
It. Because I'd be interested in knowing a little more on that myself.
Yeah.
Thanks for bringing that up, Phil. Appreciate it. We have Rick in Madison with a question. Hi, Rick.
Hi, how are you doing?
Great. Appreciate the call. What's on your mind?
Well, I got a quick question. I have 2 acres on Little Lake outside Stevens Point, and I want to keep it wetlands, but I'm paying $3,000 a year property taxes on land that is a wetland. Now, can I get a tax break on that?
Big questions. The way that wetlands are classified in our tax structure varies widely from region to region, area to area, assessor to assessor. Sometimes they're taxed as recreational land. Sometimes they're taxed as undevelopable. It really depends. So we have a little publication that says, what does it cost to own a wetland? That's the title. That helps you understand how to go through the process to see if there's anything that you can do to shift the tax qualification that your particular land is given. So I'm not promising you can get a tax break, but it is worth looking into, is your land categorized correctly?
Okay, and what's the title of the publication?
It's called What Does It Cost to Own a Wetland? And you can get that through our organization.
And we have, of course, we have a link on our Facebook page, but the phone number for your organization, again, it was at 608...
250-9971.
608-250-9971. 9971. And again, your early registration for your conference is...
Advanced registration closed yesterday. Timing. But we do welcome you at the conference if you'd like to show up on Tuesday evening. Our first event starts at 6 p.m. at the Radisson Hotel on Tuesday evening. And if you'd like to attend the banquet where Robin is the speaker, please call our office to reserve your ticket so we can make sure we can order you some food.
That's a nice hotel.
It's a beautiful hotel.
Yeah, beautiful hotel. I've spent an evening or two there at another conference. So it was a great place to get together for sure.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I tell you what, Katie, it's always a pleasure. Thank you so much for taking time to be with us today. We have information up on our Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show, more about the conference and, of course, about the Wisconsin Wetlands Association.
We're always happy to talk with you and your audience. Thanks so much for having me.
Thanks, Katie. Katie Belfus is the Outreach Programs Director of the Wisconsin Wetlands Association. Always wonderful to have her with us. And tell you what, I'm sure she's going to be back at some point. We'll do this all over again.